Welcome to the Midday for a Friday. I'm Norman Gilliland, once again in our Buck studio, meaning live music for your enjoyment for much of this hour. And with me for the fifth time?
Yep. Fifth.
Fifth time is Isabella Isawu, who was a finalist in the 2015 Bolts Young Artist Competition. A graduate of Madison Memorial High School, now a sophomore at Northwestern, and a pianist from the age of five, won the 2014 Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra Young Artist Competition, as well as the Madison Symphony Orchestra Fall Youth Concerto Competition in both 2010 and 2012. And welcome back to the Midday.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
So, you've chosen a program of Haydn and Debussy, and then your own Traveler's Reflections. And what about the Haydn? You know, these sonatas he wrote, so many of them.
Oh yeah,
we don't you don't hear that much about them.
Right. Well, Haydn wrote a good number of sonatas, 52, possibly more, but we're not quite sure exactly how many he wrote. And this one, number 23, is considered one of his earlier sonatas. It was originally written for harpsichord, and it definitely gives out that humorous flair that Haydn gives to his pieces.
Do we find it all the way through, or is just in the finale, or what's he up to here?
Well, the first movement kind of comes out as, it comes out very crisply, kind of articulate, goes into a passage work of running 32nd notes. The second movement is slower, it's more mournful, a little weary, but one defining quality is that the left hand is always arpeggiating through a series of chords, so even though it's slow, it's continuously moving. And then the third movement is what I consider to be the most humorous of the set. It's just kind of dancing and a lot of calls and answers, and concludes the sonata in a very humorous manner.
Well, are you ready?
Oh, of course.
Hey, Piano Sonata in F by Haydn. some piano witticisms from Haydn there, just kind of breaking it right off at the end,
yeah.
didn't he? Keeps you guessing as to what's next. But as you promised, Isabella, was crisp for the first movement, mm-hmm. somewhat dolorous for the second, and anything goes for the third of that piano sonata number 23 in F by Haydn. And provides quite a good contrast to what you've picked next, a completely different sort of technique required.
Yeah. So this next piece is Debussy's Mouvement from his Images, Book 1. And this movement is perpetuated throughout by a series of continuous triplets that interchange between the left and right hand. And over this, there is a kind of a wash of harmonic elements that kind of descend from the upper registers of the keyboard to the lower registers. So even though the triplets go throughout the piece, they don't really dominate the scene. They're more kind of like a pocket watch ticking throughout, and it just kind of fades out through the end. Yeah.
And you were going to couple that with another Debussy?
Mm-hmm. And the next piece I'll be playing right after that is his L'Île Joyeuse, Joyous Island. It's speculated that this piece was based off of Motta's painting, L'Embarquement de Cythere. Cythere is the birthplace of the goddess of love, Venus. And so this piece is very joyous and kind of full of beautiful dancing melodies and all sorts of things that Debussy loves to throw in.
Sounding all the while French.
Yes.
Two pieces by Claude Debussy, Mouvement from Images, and The Joyous Isle, played by my guest today, Isabella Issa Wu.
Thank you.
Bravo. Some debuts in. He loves those crossing hands, doesn't he?
Oh, yes, he does.
Quite a bit of that. It's one of those almost hand ballets mm-hmm. by the time
right.
you hit
yeah,
all the
it's
notes.
Very orchestrally written.
Yeah. For sure. L'Île Joyeuse, and before that, a mouvement from the Image Book One, Images by Claude Debussy, played by my guest today here in our Buck studio. She's Isabella Isawu, and graduate of Madison Memorial High School and going into her sophomore year at Northwestern, probably in a couple of weeks.
In a couple of weeks, yep.
Well, good. I'm sure you'll enjoy the time in the meantime. Probably won't be far from the piano.
Probably not.
Well, we'll hear more from Isabella, one of her own creations, in fact, and 12:30 quiz question, too, right after this here on WPR. Here's yesterday's quiz question for review purposes. What distinction do the following couples share? Robert and Elizabeth Barrett Browning, the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, Michael Jackson and Lisa Marie Presley, Ole Bull and Sarah Thorpe, and Robert and Clara Schumann. What distinction do those couples share? Well, they all got married, of course, and all of them, despite parental opposition at one point or another, Robert and Elizabeth Barrett Browning, well, Elizabeth's father was adamantly opposed to any of his children getting married. Go figure that one. The Duke and Duchess of Windsor, of course, he was Edward VIII, who abdicated to marry the American divorcee Wallis Simpson, and that was not approved by his parents before it even occurred, in fact, the actual wedding. Michael Jackson and Lisa Marie Presley, well, Priscilla Presley did not much care for that match, which lasted only a couple of years. Ole Bull, the celebrated Norwegian violinist who lived in Madison for a time, married secretly to Sarah Thorpe with her mother's blessing, not her father's blessing, but he seems to have been okay when they had a formal wedding on Gilman Street in Madison circa 1870. And then finally, Robert and Clara Schumann, Clara Wieck's father, was adamantly opposed to that wedding, too. All of them, of course, got married anyway. That was yesterday's question. Here's today's also a distinction, a commonality question. What distinction do they share? Asian elephants, bottlenose dolphins, orca whales, ants, and most people before stepping out. They all share something that's pretty rare, actually, apparently, among animals. What is it? What distinction do they share? Asian elephants, bottlenose dolphins, orca whales, ants, and most people before stepping out. What distinction do they share? You have about 24 minutes to answer that question. If you get it right, maybe you'll win the treasure trove today. It is, after all, Friday. You can email your answer to us at midday@wpr.org, or you can phone 1-800-442-7106 and give your answer to Linnea. And we'll see who wins that prize, the treasure trove, from among all correct respondents just before 1 o'clock. Well, Isabella, there was a theater organist by the name of Gaylord Carter who said that his mother advised him always to start a concert with one of his own pieces. That way nobody would know if he was missing some notes. You'd have an opportunity to warm up. Well, you've already done the hard part, playing the Haydn and the Debussy, but now we come to set of your own pieces, and what's the story?
Right. Well, so this composition was partly inspired by a concert I attended by the Anderson and Rowe duo, in which it really made me think about just the impact of music and its ability to uplift. And it reminded me of a conversation I had with a friend of mine about a year ago, in which my friend said he thought that that playing music should always be for a higher purpose. And this for me was an interesting idea that I considered because, well, I think we consider music as an art form. We really never think about how we can use it to, I guess, help other people and just uplift other people. And so Traveler's Reflections, this piece, was my answer to that. And it starts with a story that I will read. So, Traveler's Reflections. A traveler is journeying through a desert. He cannot recall why he is on this journey, nor did he choose the journey for himself. All he knows is that something has gone drastically wrong, and that he must find water before he perishes of thirst. He begins to be haunted by memories of the past, but he cannot understand the traumas he is haunted by. His anger, fear, and guilt grow until he is consumed by these feelings and gives way to a frenzy. Collapsing from exhaustion, the traveler realizes to his horror that he can no longer feel anything, even pain. All that is left is emptiness. When the traveler awakes, he envisions a mirage, which, like a mirror, reflects the truth of what he has faced. Encouraged by this realization, the traveler falls into a deep meditation for many days. On the 10th day, the traveler is struck by an immense joy unlike any he has ever felt before. So radiant is his happiness that the clouds above him open and shed tears of joy upon him. After many days, the traveler comes upon an oasis, sparkling with dancing water and shaded by majestic leafy trunks. The traveler revels in his new surroundings and bathes in the clear waters of the oasis. After refreshing himself, he realizes to his utter amazement that every pain he once carried is now gone. He also remembers why he was on this journey. However, there is one question that eludes him. The madness of his journey seems so real, yet what feels real also seems like madness. So, was his journey real or only a dream?
And this is told in these three pieces: Miasma, Mirage, and Oasis, Traveler's Reflections.
Thank you.
Well, I'd call that a three-act play in the hands of a pianist. It's called Traveler's Reflections, and actually, coincidentally, kind of a hint to the quiz question today. More about that in a few minutes, but that was the work of my guest, Isabella Isawu, who performed her Traveler's Reflections for us during the midday today. And I'm tempted to say take the rest of the day off. Might not happen, though, in the busy life of a pianist.
Oh, yes.
Isabella is a graduate of Madison Memorial High School and an incoming sophomore at Northwestern University. And thanks for coming by and keep in touch.
Thank you so much for having me today. It's my pleasure.
Right after this, I'll repeat our 12:30 quiz question here on WPR.